Prueba terminal específica de certificación. Nivel intermedio. Convocatoria ordinaria junio 2014. Comprensión oral. Task 1. Listen to an extract from the National Gallery podcast about the painter Cézanne and his father. Choose the correct answer and write the appropriate letter, A, B or C, in the box provided below, as shown in example 0. You will hear the recording twice. You will have 3 minutes to read the options before the recording starts.
This is the National Gallery podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. We start 2014 with the story of a young artist from Aix-en-Provence, Paul Cézanne, and his father, Louis Auguste. Cézanne made several portraits of Le Papa, the earliest of which, painted when the artist was in his mid-twenties, is in the National Gallery collection. The painting depicts Cézanne Sr. sitting upright on a chair, engrossed in his newspaper and in good health, but it's painted in a very heavy, almost crude way. To find out more about the relationship between sitter and artist, father and son, Cathy Fitzgerald spoke to Professor Alex Danchev, author of an acclaimed biography of Cézanne and edited volume of his letters. She began by asking how the teenage Cézanne got along at school.
He was an extremely good student. This is probably the most intelligent and the best educated major painter of his era. He carried off prizes in all the subjects, except in painting and drawing.
And what was his painting and drawing like?
Clumsy, rough and ready.
I've heard the word terrible used.
Yes, it was really very bad. This is a man who never really had a first-class art training. Many people thought that he was pursuing the wrong line of work, actually, including his father.
And this is a painting of Cézanne Sr., who sat for his son in the 1860s. So Cézanne, by this point, would have been in his mid-twenties. What was their relationship like?
The elder Cézanne was a self-made man. He began in hats, then he began to lend money, and then he became a banker by the simple expedient of buying the bank. The father also had very specific views on what the young Paul should do, that he should on no account be a painter.
A I can imagine it wouldn't be every parent's greatest desire.
Exactly. Uncertain, as like as not, unrewarded. And no sort of life for the son of a banker. Suzanne's father felt that Suzanne should be a lawyer. But in the end, the father was generous. He kept the allowance going all those years.
And this painting is actually an example of that generosity in a way, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is an example of his generosity in many ways. Posing for a portrait was, if you like, generous. He had better things to do. He's shown in a very characteristic pose, in the sense that he's reading his newspaper. He was generally reading his newspaper. And he's dressed rather stylishly. His hat, in particular, hats are important, is a very particular style. And the peak is very sharp. So much so that it was known in the town as Suzanne's shovel. And I'm sure that was known both to the father and the son, who therefore perhaps connived in a certain way in the painting of the hat.
So would it be fair to say that there was warmth to the relationship?
There was a relationship all Suzanne's life. The father died in the 1880s, and when Suzanne is showing one of his young admirers his early work, they find this portrait, and Suzanne says to Gasquet, "Le papa, father," very gruffly, but also very emotionally. It was a meaningful bond.
Alex Danchev, whose new translation of Cézanne's letters was published by Thames and Hudson last year, and the picture he and Cathy were talking about, the painter's father, Louis-Auguste Cézanne, is on display in Room 45.
Now listen again.
This is the National Gallery podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. We start 2014 with the story of a young artist from Aix-en-Provence, Paul Cézanne, and his father, Louis Auguste. Cézanne made several portraits of Le Papa, the earliest of which, painted when the artist was in his mid-20s, is in the National Gallery collection. The painting depicts Cézanne Sr. sitting upright on a chair, engrossed in his newspaper and in good health, but it's painted in a very heavy, almost crude way. To find out more about the relationship between sitter and artist, father and son, Cathy Fitzgerald spoke to Professor Alex Danchev, author of an acclaimed biography of Cézanne and edited volume of his letters. She began by asking how the teenage Cézanne got along at school.
He was an extremely good student. This is probably the most intelligent and the best educated major painter of his era. He carried off prizes in all the subjects, except in painting and drawing.
What was his painting and drawing like?
Clumsy, rough and ready.
I've heard the word terrible used.
Yes, it was really very bad. This is a man who never really had a first-class art training. Many people thought that he was pursuing the wrong line of work, actually, including his father.
And this is a painting of Cézanne Sr., who sat for his son in the 1860s. So Cézanne, by this point, would have been in his mid-20s. What was their relationship like?
The elder Cézanne was a self-made man. He began in hats. Then he began to lend money. And then he became a banker by the simple expedient of buying the bank. The father also had very specific views on what the young Paul should do, that he should on no account be a painter.
I can imagine it wouldn't be every parent's greatest desire.
Exactly. Uncertain, as like as not, unrewarded, and no sort of life for the son of a banker. Suzanne's father felt that Suzanne should be a lawyer. But in the end, the father was generous. He kept the allowance going all those years.
And this painting is actually an example of that generosity in a way, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is an example of his generosity in many ways. Posing for a portrait was, if you like, generous. He had better things to do. He's shown in a very characteristic pose, in the sense that he's reading his newspaper. He was generally reading his newspaper. And he's dressed rather stylishly. His hat, in particular, hats are important, is a very particular style. And the peak is very sharp. So much so that it was known in the town as Suzanne's shovel. And I'm sure that was known both to the father and the son, who therefore perhaps connived in a certain way in the painting of the hat.
So would it be fair to say that there was warmth to the relationship?
There was a relationship all Suzanne's life. The father died in the 1880s, and when Suzanne is showing one of his young admirers his early work, they find this portrait, and Suzanne says to Gasquet, "Le papa, father," very gruffly, but also very emotionally. It was a meaningful bond.
Alex Danchev, whose new translation of Cézanne's letters was published by Thames and Hudson last year. And the picture he and Cathy were talking about, the painter's father, Louis-Auguste Cézanne, is on display in Room 45.
Task 2. Listen to two extracts from the Scientific American website. For each extract, fill in the gaps with one suitable word from the recording. Write your final answers in the grid provided below, as shown in example 0. You will hear each extract twice. You will have 2 minutes to read the task. Extract 1.
This is Scientific American 60 Second Mind. I'm Christy Nicholson. Got a minute? Food can often taste a lot better when you're really, really hungry. Now a study reveals that another condition can enhance the flavor of a meal when it's part of a ritual. Scientists asked volunteers to eat some chocolate. They told one group to relax for a few minutes, then eat the chocolate in any way they wanted. But another group was given these instructions. Without unwrapping the chocolate bar, break it in half, unwrap half of the bar and eat it, then unwrap the other half and eat it. And those who went through the more elaborate process rated the chocolate more highly, enjoyed it more, and were willing to pay more for it than the group who just ate it. Another experiment included a delay between the ritual and actually eating the food, and this further increased participants' enjoyment of the food. The scientists found that personal involvement in a ritual is necessary. When subjects merely watched someone else prepare lemonade in an elaborate way, they did not experience an increase in their enjoyment of the drink. So, cut your own birthday cake, then hand out slices to everyone else, then taste your piece. It might seem like the best thing you ever ate. Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American's 60 Second Mind, I'm Christy Nicholson.
Now listen again. Extract 1.
This is Scientific American 60 Second Mind. I'm Christy Nicholson. Got a minute? Food can often taste a lot better when you're really, really hungry. Now a study reveals that another condition can enhance the flavor of a meal when it's part of a ritual. Scientists asked volunteers to eat some chocolate. They told one group to relax for a few minutes, then eat the chocolate in any way they wanted. But another group was given these instructions. Without unwrapping the chocolate bar, break it in half, unwrap half of the bar and eat it, then unwrap the other half and eat it. And those who went through the more elaborate process rated the chocolate more highly, enjoyed it more, and were willing to pay more for it than the group who just ate it. Another experiment included a delay between the ritual and actually eating the food, and this further increased participants' enjoyment of the food. The scientists found that personal involvement in a ritual is necessary. When subjects merely watched someone else prepare lemonade in an elaborate way, they did not experience an increase in their enjoyment of the drink. So, cut your own birthday cake, then hand out slices to everyone else, then taste your piece. It might seem like the best thing you ever ate. Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American's 60 Second Mind, I'm Christy Nicholson. Extract 2.
Mondays. Maybe the toughest day to get out of bed, but Mondays appear to be the most popular day for people to consider giving up smoking. That's what Google search queries from 2008 to 2012 suggest. Global Google searches across 6 different languages reveal a weekly pattern to when people consider snuffing out their butts for good. And search terms like quit smoking help were most popular on Monday, an average of 25% higher than other days. That's when combined across English, French, Chinese, Portuguese, Russian, and Spanish. So finds a study in JAMA Internal Medicine, published by the American Medical Association. These higher search numbers are real. It's not that there are more Google searches for everything on Mondays. Of course, the stats show only that people were doing info searches on Monday, not that they actually tried to quit. Still, the data mining offers insights. If the start of a new week means heightened interest in tobacco termination, public health campaigns might also target Mondays as the best time to hook a smoker trying to kick the habit. Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American 60 Second Health, I'm Dina Fine-Marin.
Now listen again. Extract 2.
Mondays. Maybe the toughest day to get out of bed, but Mondays appear to be the most popular day for people to consider giving up smoking. That's what Google search queries from 2008 to 2012 suggest. Global Google searches across 6 different languages reveal a weekly pattern to when people consider snuffing out their butts for good. And search terms like quit smoking help were most popular on Monday, an average of 25% higher than other days. That's when combined across English, French, Chinese, Portuguese, Russian, and Spanish. So finds a study in JAMA Internal Medicine, published by the American Medical Association. These higher search numbers are real. It's not that there are more Google searches for everything on Mondays. Of course, the stats show only that people were doing info searches on Monday, not that they actually tried to quit. Still, the data mining offers insights. If the start of a new week means heightened interest in tobacco termination, public health campaigns might also target Mondays as the best time to hook a smoker trying to kick the habit.
Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American 60 Second Health, I'm Dina Fine-Marin.
Fin de la prueba.